Okay. I take this annual opportunity to give a shmooze to the entire yeshiva very, very seriously. My goal is to inspire all of you to grow and develop as B'nai Torah, but I'm also realistic. I know that not all of you will change from the shmooze, but hopefully at least one of you will, and maybe that one person will be you. Who here is really truly looking to be inspired this morning? Okay? I figured as much. Not many hands. So let's talk about, forget about talking about inspiration, let's talk about business. I happen to have gone to an accelerated business school a number of years ago, and just to let you know a secret, half of business school is about employee satisfaction. And it's a very logical equation. Happy employees means work gets done well. Meaning if the employees are happy, the work is good, and if the work is good, the company does well, and the CEO and management and the executives are happy. And we did a case study on the SAS software company based in Cary, North Carolina, headed by Mr. Jim Goodnight. That's actually his name. Mr. Jim Goodnight, who happens to be worth around $7.6 billion, has 14,000 employees. Now, let me explain to you the secret of his success. And I'm going to highlight 8 separate points about the SAS software company based in North Carolina. And here they go. Number one, they offer a nice paycheck and free first-class medical, dental, and vision care for the entire family. If you need to see a specialist, they pick up 80% of the tab. Number two, the close to 14,000 employees all get a private office. Number three, so this is a long list. There's an on-site hair salon, nail salon, shoe repair, jewelry repair, dry cleaning, a tailor. Personal packages can be shipped straight to the company. You don't have to go to the post office ever. You never have to go to the post office. Grocery shopping can be done there. A farmer's market comes and brings fresh produce, eggs, meats, and flowers. Number four, state-of-the-art recreation and fitness center, where you can sign up with a personal trainer, take aerobics classes, or work out on your own. There's an indoor Olympic-sized pool, competitive and non-competitive recreational leagues, frisbee, golf, soccer, kickball, volleyball, basketball, and billiards. SAS may look like a country club, but of course it's not. But there's a country club that has 3 beautiful golf courses. Now, to join, it's $30,000. But if you're an SAS employee, it's only $3,000 to join. Now you're understanding why the article about this company is called Heaven on Earth. Mamish Heaven on Earth. It's the life. Number five. There's a subsidized cafeteria which includes a kids' menu with hot dogs shaped like octopuses. It encourages parents to have lunch with their kids. The children are walked over from the on-site subsidized daycare that is also offered. Eating lunch with the kids helps workers stay connected to them during their workday. Plus, the kids get to see where their mother and father work. Now, if you don't want to have lunch with your kids, no problem, right? SAS has 4 on-site subsidized gourmet cafes, coffee bar, Starbucks. There's a free breakfast every Friday, fresh fruit every Monday. Free snack and drink stations on every floor. Gewaldic. You can always visit a cafe and a caterer if you want a last-minute birthday cake. And number six is that the SAS culture keeps employees content and keeps them from leaving. On average, software companies have a turnover rate of around 20%, which means that every year 20% of their staff, their employees, leaves. When it comes to SAS, it's somewhere between 2 and 3%, which is obviously a tremendous, very clear difference between the regular software companies and SAS, which means their employees do not leave and they're happy. A tremendous, tremendous feat. Just also want to highlight a few more things. Actually, maybe we'll focus on one. One would think that who gets treated well? The people who are the software programmers. Those are the ones who want to keep happy. Those are the ones that really are driving the company. But guess what? Jim Goodnight feels that even the gardeners, right? The landscapers. It's quoted over here. What does he say? But Goodnight wants not just his programmers, but all SAS employees to know their work matters. Landscapers employed by the firm, for example, are given dedicated acreage to care for more areas so that they come to treat their work as their own. So just to describe what SAS software company means and what it does for its employees is very, very remarkable. It's remarkable. And let me tell you a story. In the MIT graduating class of software programmers, there's 2 guys. One named Jeff Callahan, and the other name was Brian O'Connor. Now, Brian O'Connor, he was on top of his class, and who's given a very cushy, lucrative job from the SAS software company, come down to North Carolina, move his family. And Brian, this is what he ended up doing for the subsequent years. Work started at 9 o'clock. He rolled in 9:15. He was given deadlines when to finish certain software programs. He didn't always finish them on time. He was a little bit rude. He wasn't refined. He didn't necessarily get along with his coworkers. And when it came to the weekend, he thought he was so smart. He decided he'd party over the weekend. Perhaps he'd indulge in extracurricular activities. And when he came back to work on Monday morning, he wasn't necessarily in tip-top shape. His brain wasn't working properly. During work hours, he was seen on his phone playing Candy Crush. Perhaps he was playing chess. And I would even like venture to say that when I was growing up, there was a game. You had water inside, and you had like these rings that go on the water. I think you guys may know about it, because apparently I sat in a schmooze once in this room, and I saw somebody, I couldn't believe it, play this for an extended period of time without the water. So yes, I know you probably know about this game because it's on a phone, but I only know about this game because I actually saw there was water. You send the ring up and it drops down. But so this is what Brian did. Here he was, he had tremendous potential, he had a future to be a great programmer. I don't think we need to describe what happened subsequent years. After a number of years of lack of growth and contributing positively to the company, Brian found another job, perhaps in a less lucrative company. But Jeff Callahan, his classmate in the graduating class of MIT, he came to work on time. He finished his programs when the deadline came. He got along with his coworkers. So much so that the executives on top of him invited him and promoted him time and time again until he became the right-hand man of Jim Goodnight. And instead of being alone in his house partying over the weekend, he was invited to Jim Goodnight's house, which was like a palace with any type of food and every type of indulging you would like over the weekend. And of course, they didn't overindulge because they understood that they had a job to do during the week. He worked there for many, many years, worked himself up. He retired with tremendous benefits and admiration from all of his coworkers, and certainly the executives, and certainly from Mr. Jim Goodnight. A model of the perfect employee and somebody who really became close with Mr. Jim Goodnight. Now I ask you, who is doing the right thing? Who is smart? Who took advantage of the opportunity? And I think everybody, I don't think we need to raise our hands. It's obvious that Brian destroyed his life. And Jeff took advantage of this golden opportunity and maximized his potential. And when you look at such a company, you realize, wow, that is the life. You don't have to worry about a thing. Jim Goodnight takes care of everything. As long as you do your job. And you know what? It's worth it to do your job. And I didn't really copy all the different quotes about they don't overtax their people either. Because that part of the muscle is not really by us, and it doesn't really fit properly. But as long as you feel your role, as long as you satisfy your role, Jim Goodnight takes care of you. To the extent that people in the company feel like Jim Goodnight is God. Now let me tell you something. Jim Goodnight may have $7.6 billion. But guess what? HaKadosh Baruch Hu is below kol aretz kavodo. He owns the world. You know how everybody, I know most people in this room know that HaKadosh Baruch Hu owns the entire world. Because the Gemara on Daf Lamed, in the beginning of the Rule of Gozer, discusses, why does Hashem care if you bring a stolen korban? As Rashi explains, it was his before and it's his afterwards. What's the difference? Guess what? Forget $7.6 billion. HaKadosh Baruch Hu owns everything. Everything. Right? I think all of us would say, if we were working for Jim Goodnight, we would go above and beyond the call of duty to make sure we increased our salary. We made Jim Goodnight happy. We did our job. We were successful at what we did because Jim Goodnight's going to take care of you. Rabboisai. HaKadosh L'Havdil Elf Alfi Abdullah. HaKadosh Baruch Hu is running this world. L'Hashem Ha'aretz Umloa. He has everything. His paycheck is not limited to the SAS software company. And not only that, we learned in last week's parsha that a Kodesh Baruch is not mekaper schar kol beria. You know, it could be that a person working for SAS Software, it could be that he's going to do a great job and it's going to be overlooked. And maybe Jim Goodnight, this great CEO, is not going to realize how great this employee is. But I can tell you one thing from last week's parsha, and that is that if you do anything positive for quote Shemayim, I can guarantee you that you can get rewarded. Why? Because Rashi tells us, why do we throw the trefa to the dog? Why do we throw the trefa to the dog? Because guess what? When the Jews were leaving Egypt, the dogs didn't bark. Wow. A dog deserves reward? Yes. In Hashem's world, even a dog deserves reward. HaKadosh Baruch Hu was in the kapeach schar kol beria. Any creature on this earth that serves Hashem, that does something for Shemayim, gets rewarded. So I asked you, when it was so obvious in the muscle of Jim Goodnight and the employees in SAS, and you saw this guy getting up and working hard and going to work every day, and the other guy is slacking off, it was obvious nobody here in their right mind would say, you know what, I'd like to be Brian and bum out and ruin my job and ruin my life. Of course I'd be Jeff. So understand that muscle and internalize a muscle 100-fold and many-fold over. Because you cannot compare Jim Goodnight to Kadosh Baruch Hu. And you can't compare the retirement package from SAS Software Company to what it means to live a life of nitzvias and olam haza and olam haba. Can we even come to fathom what it means? If a person excels and succeeds and makes all the right moves in this world, forget about making all the right moves for 60 years working for a company and having a retirement package. Can we even understand the analogy that if we make all the right moves, if we make all the right moves in this world, what that means for our soul for eternity? The same way it was so clear to you how right Jeff was when he succeeded in being a great employee and what that meant, that's peanuts, that's bupkis, that's bubblegum, that's nothing compared to what it means to serve a Kadosh Baruch Hu the 120 years or whatever, how many ever years we've given, or maybe Esther, serving Hashem, what that means for the future. In this week's parasha, we discuss the building of the Mishkan. Pasuk tells us, "V'asu l'mikdash v'shechantu b'sodom." Make for me a dwelling place, and I will dwell there. Make me a tabernacle. Make me a holy temple. Make me a place. The Medrash tells us that it's a marshal, that there was a king, and he had a lone daughter, and another king from another country came and married his daughter. And the king whose daughter it was said, you know what? I love this daughter so much. I can't part with her. But on the other hand, you married her. What am I going to do? So the king said, wherever you go, build a little room, build a little house for me so I can live in your room. That's the mashal. HaKadosh Baruch Hu tells the Jewish people, I gave you my precious daughter, I gave you my Torah. And you got to take the Torah with you. But make a place for me. I need a place to reside with you. I need to be with you. And the Nefesh Chaim says to Shem Zohar, and it's quoted from other sources, not necessarily Chazal, V'asu l'mikdash v'sechati b'sochom in them, v'lo b'socho never. It doesn't say with over there in the tabernacle, in the mikdash. It doesn't say that. Why? He said the Kadosh Baruch Hu, v'asu l'mikdash v'sechati b'sochom b'socho echad b'echad. If you make yourself out to be the place of holiness in Kedusha, says Hashem, I'm going to reside with you. L'havil elef alfevdolos, Jim Goodnight, if you do the right thing, he will reside with you. He'll come over to your house and make sure you have everything you need. If you go ahead and you make yourself a life of Kedusha and make the right moves and do the right things, make the right decisions, Hashem says, Gevaldik, I'm going to live with you. Not just in this world, the next world, perfect. And I read a story, which I heard it first, and I read it up, about somebody who, after the war, was found in the base of Medrash in Switzerland. And a man was passing by in the middle of the night. It's not clear if it was 12, or it was 1, or it was 2. And he saw a light on in the yeshiva. He said, that's strange. Why is there a light on in yeshiva in the middle of the night? And this gentleman walked in, and he saw everything was set up for the next day. So he assumed that the light is on erroneously. And he went to go show off the light, and he noticed a little young man, around 20 years old at the time, sitting and learning. The only person in the whole area, I guess it was yeshiva, the only person. There was no havim, there would be somebody awake at this hour learning in this medrash. And this gentleman asks this young man, he says, "What are you doing here? Why are you learning so late at night?" And he assumed that the person would say, "I want to be a big rav, I want to be a Rosh Yeshiva, and I'm learning the text, I need to prepare. I want to excel." And this young man said, "No. You see, man, you know why I'm here? Because I want to be a merkava for the Shekhinah. I want to be a chariot for the Shekhinah. I want a Kodesh Baruch Hu's presence to be inside of me my whole life. I want to be a chariot for the Shekhinah." That's not the end of the story. Years later, this man was traveling from Switzerland to Bnei Brak. And he heard about a great Godel. His name was Steinman. And he remembered that young man that he met in the Beis Medrash in the middle of the night. His name was Steinman. And he remembered what he told him about being the chariot for the Shekhinah. And he went at a time, he went to Steinman's house at a time when they were not accepting visitors. So they said, "I'm sorry, sir. You can't come in now." He says, "I don't want to talk to him. I just want to see him. I want to see him. He's the same person I met that night in Switzerland." So he said, "No, okay, no problem." And he walked in and he looked and he saw the same person and he left. This is a motif, a mantra that Rav Steinman held of when he was a youngster around your age. "I want to be a chariot for the Shekhinah, for the presence of God." You all have that opportunity. You're still that young. And if you're not that young, if you're older and you're listening to this, like myself, you can still be a chariot for the Shekhinah. It's possible. But when was that decision made? When was that feeling cultivated? When he was younger? And look what he accomplished. Is that not the same perspective as Jeff? Whatever his name was, Callahan, who was working for SAS? Rav Steinman Zatzal was working for Kodesh Baruch Hu, the greatest boss there is. And he wanted to be that ambassador, the chariot for the Shekhinah. And he succeeded. And we don't need to become the Godel Hador per se, become on his level. Everybody according to the level, but you need to have that desire. Each and every one of you, you can go to college, you can go out to work, but you can still be that chariot, the champion, the ambassador for the presence of God. With that being said, I want to highlight something that I've gone through a number of times in the last 2 years about my Brian and Jeff Marshall. And I want to tell you that people still remember these ideas. Now, again, a lot of stereotyping, but I think it's very important for you to realize the decisions that you make. The key is while you're young, you're in yeshiva, you're exposed to Rebbeim, you're exposed to Torah more so than any other time in your life. You're in Yerushalayim, you're in Kodesh. Very close to the Mokom HaMikdash, what we're talking about. Now's the time to realize, you know what? I want to be a chariot for the presence of God. I want to be a living example of Kiddush Hashem. What else are we here for? We're here to play chess on our phones, Candy Crush, the thing where you put the rings in the water. Well, it's not really water because it's really a computer. It can't be. It can't be. That's what we're here for. We're here to. It doesn't make sense. And I'm not. And I'm trying to explain to you that if you jump for this, did Jeff Callahan miss out on life because he worked hard and he served his CEO? Absolutely not. He was taken care of. So Jim Goodnight took care of Jim, whatever his name is, Jeff Callahan. You don't think I'm going to show him to take care of you? If you go ahead and you dedicate your life to being a champion and a chariot of his presence, you think you're going to miss life? Oh, I'm going to miss the big game. If I go ahead and I go learn and I epitomize and I display what it means to honor Hashem. The biggest Jim Goodnight there is in the world, L'Havadolos. So let me highlight 20 different things that I came up with. Some of them were touched upon by Rich 2 weeks ago. A few, 20 things to get you thinking. What does it mean to live like to be a champion, a chariot of the presence of God in this world? 20 examples that I think most of which you relate to. Number one, Jeff is the kind of person who comes to Shachar sometime. Brian is the type of person who sleeps in. Because Jeff understands he's here for one purpose. To be a chariot. A champion of the presence of God. Kiddush Shem Shemayim. Brian may say, oh, Shafrach, oh, my madrich didn't wake me up. Oh, I didn't hear my alarm. Well, that's because you went to sleep at 3 o'clock in the morning. I don't know why you went to sleep at 3 o'clock in the morning, but that's, what are you here for? Do you want to be like Brian O'Connor? Or do you want to be like Jeff Callahan? Do you want to be the bum who gets fired after a few months or a few years at SAS? Do you want to live the life? Number two, Jeff comes to the Seder at time. He goes to all Shiurim, 3 o'clock Shiurim, 6:10 Shiurim, night Seder, Muster Seder. Maybe he learns a little extra after 10 o'clock. Brian says, hey, the ball field's pretty good. The basketball court's good. I want to work on my jump shot. Number three, summer plans. Jeff is interested in what summer plans are going to allow me to develop myself as a Ben Torah, as a Baal Chesed. Should I go to Camp Pass? Should I go to a Kollel program? Should I go to a camp where I can have an influence on others, give back to the community? Or should I, I'm not saying there's anything wrong getting a summer job, or should I have a summer job and hang out with the buddies at night, watch, you know, excessive amounts of TV, etc., etc.? Number four, should I come to Yeshiva and Eretz for a year, get as much as I can, get out of here? Or should I really seriously consider coming back to Shana Bet? Another half a year, a whole year, 2 years of full-time learning? Wow. What an opportunity. I'd like to say that coming back to Shana Bet is like living in an incubator. You know, if a child is born too early and he can't expose himself to the outside world, he needs to stay in an incubator because he needs to develop the nutrients and the minerals to be able to sustain, to maintain himself in the outside world. Eventually he has to go. He can't stay in the incubator forever. That's understandable. But he can't leave until he gets all the vitamins and minerals that he needs. There's no doubt in my mind that an extra year in Yeshiva and Eretz Yisrael is that incubator. It's more time to internalize and to absorb the vitamins and the minerals and the nutrients, the spiritual vitamins and nutrients that a person needs to succeed in life as a Ben Torah. Number five, let's assume for argument's sake, these two young men, Brian and Jeff, go to YU. And Brian is only focused on his afternoon studies. He's only cares about his secular. I don't have to base vendors nights in. And Jeff, no. He takes his afternoon seriously. He takes, well, let's just say he's for accounting. He takes it seriously. But guess what? He takes his Limurei Kodesh in the morning and Minyanim and night sitter just as seriously. He has the whole package. Number six, girls. Jeff says, you're right. I'm not anti girls in general. Of course I want to get married. That's obvious. But right now is just not the time. Right now, I have enough to focus on my learning. I'm focusing on my secular studies. I'm focusing on my job. And at the time comes when I'm ready, when my rebbeim tell me, or I discuss with my parents or whoever, that it's time to get married, I'll find a girl. And Brian says, no. What are you talking about? Now's the time to hang out with but you're not ready to get married. No, it's okay. It's okay. Come on. I come from X background and Y background. It's okay. It's okay to have platonic relationships, if there's such a thing. Number seven, who do they marry? Jeff's looking for a modest, bas chesed, milos tovos, yirashimayim, chidavin, she's looking for a relationship with Hashem. She wants to build a family founded on Torah and mitzvahs. And Brian says, does she bake well? Is she her external qualities? It's fine. Number eight, after they get married, what does the Shabbos table look like? I'm very machped, usually very machped to finish on time, so I'm going to try to talk faster. The Shabbos table. Jeff's Shabbos table still is the very Torah. Zimiros, similar to the tables that you sat at last Shabbos. How exciting it was. Brian, his Shabbos table, Sports Illustrated, politics, Lashon Hara, Nebuch. But these are the types of tables that you have later on in life will stem largely in part of how you focused on your year, what your perspective was during this year in Yeshiva and Eretz Yisrael. How do you dress on Shabbos? Nebuch. Would you wear a khaki pants and a purple shirt to a wedding? Shabbos Kodesh is a million times more special than a wedding. A wedding's very special. When it comes to the chiyuv of Kovet Shabbos, how could it be? I have to tell you something. I don't like to mention the person's name. He's in the community that you're familiar with, and he once heard a shiur from a rav from YU, who said, "How could it be that a person can wear a colored shirt on Shabbos. This is what the Rav said. I'm not saying. This is what he said. And what was his raya? Would you wear that clothing to a wedding? And he's right. He's right. And Brian, he wouldn't necessarily have the same dress code on Shabbos as going to a wedding. How does he approach shul on Shabbos? In America, I can't believe it. Minyanim in America start 8:45, 9:15, and you still have people come late for Kiddush Kob. That's what they come for. Jeff, of course, comes on time. He comes to the Rav Shir. But Brian, he wants to know which booze they're serving, who's bringing the booze this week. Nebuch. Hilchot Shabbos. The Rosh Hashanah Brura tells us in the beginning of Hilchot Shabbos, it's not possible to keep Shabbos without knowing Hilchot Shabbos. We can go our whole lives thinking, oh, I don't turn on the light, I don't drive a car, I'm Shomer Shabbos. Rabbi say, it's not possible. There's so much more. Just open the Bible, as the Rosh Hashanah, I think it refers to, the 39 Malachos, the great Bible on Hilchot Shabbos. There's so much to know, but guess what? These are not restrictions, they're privileges, they're empowerments. Then you'll feel Shabbos. A person can go through life thinking, oh, listen, I don't turn on the light, I don't drive a car on Shabbos, but guess what? Shabbos doesn't do anything for me. Guess what? If you felt the spirit of Shabbos, if you learned Hilchot Shabbos, you would feel it. Minyan 3 times a day. In America, in most places in America, it's not hard. Most places of work have a mincha minyan nearby. But a person has to want to go to have a mincha. Marav, yes, you're right, when you come home after a long day of work. Marav, stay home. Jeff's the kind of guy who says, of course, I'm running to shul. Just because I'm working for it, just because I'm working 9 to 5, why is that a contradiction to minyan 3 times a day? Brian, unfortunately, Daf Yomi, do you know how many people are very much in the business world that are finishing shots? Jeff is that kind of guy. He understands. What is he here for? He's here to hang out and watch TV all day? It can't be. It's possible to be in the working world 9 to 5 and be successful and be a Talmid Chacham as we heard this past Shabbos. There's no excuse. Is he Jeff? And that's his mantra? He wants to be a chariot for the Shechina? He wants to live with HaKadosh Baruch Hu? Chesed. Of course, obvious. If Jeff's whole aura is Avodas Hashem, what can I do to be a chariot for the Shechina? That's my motif. Of course he's going to be Malach Chesed. He sees somebody in need. Oh, what a never! Oh, he went to the wrong college. He had bad grades. That's why he can't afford that. Talking about be Baal Chesed, Stoka, Aser Kadesh Tzasher. Jeff is Makbid to give 10% of his income to Stoka. Brian, Stoka, it's my money. 15 football. Now, assuming that this is the one time people have tightness on this thing, obviously the Chachila person should be, you know, shouldn't be involved in these things. Obviously, but Jeff, guess what? Yeah, he can't control himself. He grew up loving a certain team. So you know what he does on Sunday? He watches the highlights. Or he watches a little bit of that game. Okay, Seder. Brian, we told you he's not doing Minyan. We told you he's not doing Daf Yomi. He's not coming to show on time. But you know what he does Sunday? 12:30 NFL game time with Mike Tirico, Chris Berman, Deion Sanders. I don't know who's doing it now. I don't know if they're still there. That would be crazy. If they're still involved, that would be... He sits from 12:30 to see who's probable, who's questionable, who's doubtful, and then he sits there. And then I couldn't believe it. People told me that from 12:30 you can be in your seat on the couch from 12:30 p.m. to 1 a.m. because of course you have to watch the post game show also in the 3 games: the 1 o'clock game, the 4 o'clock game. Assuming you're from the East Coast, right? There's the 8 o'clock game, and everything. Can you imagine? Can you imagine? Nebish, somebody 2 years ago told me that a person spends 73 hours a week on fantasy football. Pathetic. 16, chinuch of children. Jeff, he cares about his kid. Right, just to tell you one quick story, and I really don't like to go over time. Last night, I'm not saying you have to live in Eretz Yisrael either, but by the story, it's not true. I'm just telling you what happened to me last night. My daughter from first grade came home with her sitter play. She came home jumping and flying. And where did we go? We were zoyed to go to the Kaisel a few hours after her sitter play. And she went back this morning with her sitter to daven for the first time with excitement. That would only happen if she feels a Jeff. If she feels the presence of the Shekhinah in her home. Rabbosai, can you imagine? If you leave here without internalizing these Yesodos, what's going to be? I'm going to speak very quickly. 17, speech. Jeff talks refined. He doesn't curse foul language. Brian, Nebuch. 18, faithful to spouse. It's not a joke, unfortunately. I have to mention this to my shmooze. Faithful to spouse. Jeff's family is built on Torah and Avodah and Mitzvahs. Is going to be more likely to have a faithful spouse, Nebuch. 19, family vacations. There's nothing more than family vacation, but is the family vacation to Aruba or is the family vacation to Israel? Both are vacations, but one's certainly much more ruch than the other one. And 20, and with this I'll end, that if Jeff lives himself a life of Torah and Mitzvahs and wants to be a chariot for the Shekhinah, when his son asks to come back to Shana Bet, Jeff will say yes, Brian will say no. Rabboisai, take this seriously, take life seriously, and you should be zochet to siyata d'shmaya all the days of your life.